For the first talk, we have our speaker, Mr. Paul Pickle, and he has the talk on title, Lessons from Teaching OpenStreetMap in a Master's Program. Let's welcome him with a big round of applause.
All right. Thank you. Good morning, folks. So I'm Paul. I'm from the University of British Columbia in Canada. And I'm in the Department of Forest Resources Management. So I'm in the Faculty of Forestry. And I'm not a forester by training, but my background is kind of GIS and GI science, and that's what I teach in this context of forestry. And so I teach in a variety of programs, but one of them that I'm going to talk about today is our Keystone Geomatics program, which is a master's degree. And I'll say a little bit more about that. So we have a Master of Geomatics for Environmental Management program at UBC, and this is a course-based professional master's program, so there's no thesis involved, but students take courses, and they do this in 9 months, so it's a very intensive program, and as part of that coursework, there's a 6-credit course that they do a capstone project in, which is what I teach. And yeah, we have, the format's a little messed up from switching from PowerPoint to LibreOffice here, but we work with community partners all around the world to match NGOs, governments, whatever, to our students to do projects for them. And so yeah, my idea here with this talk is just to kind of talk about how I've been teaching OpenStreetMap kind of in this context of environmental management, and in particular of students who are doing work with various community partners. And a quick plug that there's a blurry kind of QR code here on the slides, but you can go look at our project library to see what our students are doing. And we, like I said, we work with partners all around the world, including a project in the last year or so here in the Philippines as well. Also, if you are an NGO or somebody who has a project idea and you want to mentor one of our students, you can also find more information there. The next slide, please. Yeah, so in this program, we teach a lot of things, GIS, remote sensing, geomatics, coding, programming, and we love free and open source software. So we have definitely shifted a lot over the last few years towards QGIS, Postgres, PostGIS, and a variety of other utilities and names that you might recognize like GDAL and PDAL. We also do some web mapping and version control as well. And yeah, OpenStreetMap's not on here, but that's part of what we do as well. And so it's not an entire course in OpenStreetMap, but that's kind of one of the things that we introduce and expose our students to. So I just want to share some of those the challenges that we've kind of come up against with doing that and teaching that in a graduate setting, and hopefully share with you some solutions maybe that you might be able to take away for your own programs. So, in OpenStreetMap, one of the issues, as you may all be familiar with, are the tags. And, some tags are useful, some aren't, some are missing. And, yeah, one of them that is probably pretty relevant for us in the forestry context is this natural tag, which about 40% or so of OSM objects are described by some natural tag, so a non-null natural tag. And great for me, more than half of them describe trees or something about trees, with tree being the biggest one, and then wood being another major one. So that's about 50% of those data, which is great. It's also kind of a challenge because in my context, where I'm teaching land management that can be comprised of pretty rural areas, wood doesn't actually tell me a lot about what's there. Maybe that's a good tag value for, say, a base map, but it doesn't tell me the type of forest it is or the type of ecosystem is, this kind of thing. And I'm cherry picking here. There's potentially other tags. You know, I could get some of that and glean some of that information from. But this is kind of one of the initial limitations. Next slide, please. This is my beautifully big province of British Columbia. If you're not familiar with where this is, there's a little globe there. We're in Manila on the far left, and it's just a short little hop across the pond onto the west coast of North America. It's a big province, just shy of about 1 million square kilometers, and fewer than 6 million people live here. So it's like 115 million or something here in the Philippine Islands. So many, many fewer people and over a larger area. So low population density, and probably nearly most of those people live down in Vancouver, which is where UBC is. This is the natural tag with the value of wood that I was showing earlier. And yeah, you can see our province is very forested. So there's a lot of forests here. And this is maybe a bit misleading because they're not all the same forests. We have temperate rainforests, we have boreal forests, we have interior forests that are drier, deserts, all kinds of different ecosystems across this vast territory. And you'll notice there's like conspicuously a couple of places that are missing, little empty bald patches, which I'll come back to in a moment. So mostly it's great, like we have good coverage of where forests are, but we don't necessarily know what they are, which is kind of a challenge if I want to go into more depth, right, about, or if a student wants to be able to use those data for a particular natural resource management project. Next slide, please. The other tag that we have available is land use, and this one's of interest to us because we deal and teach with like land management. And this tag is much less used than the natural tag, but one of the issues with this tag as well is that some of the values that are in the tag are in fact not land uses at all. So like farmland and residential, these are land uses, but there's grass, forest, meadow. Those are not land uses. They're land covers, right? They're describing what's there physically. A land use, as the little subtitle there suggests, is the primary use of the area of the land for humans. So, you know, grass may be a land cover that's actually embedded or recorded here under land use. And just as an example, like grass could be a golf course. It could be a lawn. It could be a football pitch. There's a variety of different uses of grass that could be more descriptive as well. And this is kind of a challenge just in my context because for my students, I teach them I really emphasize the difference between land covers and land uses. So this is already an initial challenge. And again, you know, I'm cherry picking here, but we could potentially have to move between a bunch of different tags in order to resolve these land uses and land covers. Next slide, please. The other challenge with land use is that there's not much of it, at least in my province. So these are all the places where there is a valid land use tag, which is not much of the province. But some of the areas that were missing from the other map, these are forest as a land use that are here. So now I have forest as a land cover, you know, recorded under these two different tags. So again, just kind of the challenge of the extent and the availability of the data, its completeness, as well as possibly also the conceptual limitations, right, with how those values are actually encoded, because folks who are probably entering in land uses are not necessarily experts in being able to distinguish between land covers and land uses, as one example. Next slide, please. One of the other challenges that's related to the tags is something that you're probably all familiar with, which is that you can have missing tags or you have tags that say yes, and it's not more detailed than this. And this is a bit of a challenge for students who might have been trained, you know, to learn GIS, where we don't often find yes as a value for a particular attribute. I'm borrowing this figure from these presenters from a few years back in State of the Map, which I find really useful for kind of summarizing this problem, where for any given object, we can have a tag that logically could exist for that object, or maybe it doesn't logically exist for that object. So maybe like a road does not have opening hours, for example. That's kind of the conceptual model. And so the value for that tag would be empty. But in the case that it can exist logically, then we have these other things that we can observe. For maybe we might have values that are actually entered there. That's the ideal case, right, where we have a good value, and hopefully it's the right value. That's another problem. But in the other case, we might not have a value. And so in one case, we might just have a missing empty null value, and that could be a valid null value, missing value, there's nothing there. Or it could be an implied value, like yes, where the absence of yes maybe implies no, but then that's also not true, right? So this is kind of a quirky thing about OpenStreetMap that I think we're mostly familiar with, but students who are learning it won't be always. And this is this is not a huge hurdle to overcome, but it's another thing to cross. Next slide, please. So setting aside the tags and the values and those issues that we're familiar with, the other weird thing about OpenStreetMap for students is that it has a very different data model than what they might be used to with other kinds of data that they've worked with in the past. And I borrowed this figure from Johan Topf, who's He's spoken quite frequently at various State of the Map conferences. And yeah, he's shown this figure quite often. Maybe you've seen it before. It just describes kind of the data model between nodes, ways, relations, and tags. Notably, you know, there's constraints in here, like there can only be up to 2,000 nodes that describe a way. This is kind of a weird thing. And then there's this relation thing that's in the middle that connects some things, and some things can belong to relations, but not always, right? This is kind of a weird thing. And then also, you know, there's no native polygon as a data type in OpenStreetMap. We can represent polygons with relations and ways, but you know, when we do that, we're just defining a line that topologically encloses some area, which is the mathematical definition of a polygon. But in almost every other software and other kinds of data we're working with or teaching with, it's points, lines, and polygons, right? So there's some weird abstraction that's happening, and it requires some exposition to kind of describe this. It's also an opportunity, because even though we're using slightly different words here for talking about the same thing, they're all generally the same building blocks, and we're all kind of speaking the language of math. So, but this is still something that is not entirely clear always, and also a bit of a challenge to teach with. Next slide, please. And then, of course, the representation of the tags as key values. So unless these students are coming into the classroom with a background in computer science, where they may have been exposed to this key value pair system, they're probably not going to be familiar with how you can mix and match different data types together under a same key. You know, like you could theoretically store different geometries under one key, or you could mix and match different data types under a key. You can even put a key inside of a key, right? So this is kind of not necessarily groundbreaking for somebody who studies computer science, but if you're teaching all the other, you know, basic intro level GIS stuff with points, lines, and polygons with attribute tables, then this becomes kind of unusual. And then we also have, you know, these cases here where we have or record our some concatenated lists of values for a given key. And so those have to be exploded and parsed out in order to actually make them useful. So lots of things that happen that are challenging to work with. That just require a bit of teaching. And I think it's a little bit unusual, more of an effort is required to be able to communicate these ideas properly to students who are only being exposed to, you know, shape files or geodatabases and other things. Next slide, please. So some things that I've done to help to, yeah, make this easier for students to interact with in OpenStreetMap and to take up OpenStreetMap data in their projects and otherwise, is because I teach a lot of database stuff with Postgres and PostGIS, what I did is I took basically a seed of the planet and brought that into a Postgres database using the OSM to PSQL utility. And that brings it in once. And then I do a daily update using Osmosis, fetching it from GeoFabric or any of the other replication servers. And this just kind of strips away all of that unnecessary difficulty that students come up against with everything I just described. Because now in QGIS or ArcGIS or whatever software or client they want to use, Python, R, whatever language you speak, you can go and interact with the database, right? You can explore it as tabular data as you would find almost any other kind of spatial data. So yeah, you have points, lines, and polygons natively here, and you can go in and filter and query by the attributes in the same way that you ordinarily would with any other kind of data. So already kind of making it a little bit simpler and easier for students to get past all of these issues, not necessarily the issues with the tag values themselves, but at least reshaping the data into a way that they're a little bit maybe more familiar with. Next slide, please. Yeah, so then inside whatever application you want, right, you can teach them SQL, which is what I do a lot, and you can write queries that work with PostGIS functions, grab data, manipulate it in whatever way they want, or even outside of SQL, yeah, you could just bring in the layer into QGIS or something, right, and it's very kind of intuitive then, because I'm not trying to rewrite the wheel in terms of how they already understand spatial data and layers in different applications. And this is kind of a weird one, just because I'm summing the total area of the wood tag in British Columbia, and it comes out to be about 66 million hectares, which is interestingly about 10% more than the actual official forest cover in British Columbia. So that's already kind of a weird thing. Anyway, so just a way for students to start to explore OpenStreetMap in a way that's native to how they might understand already. And yeah, really the idea here is to create a sandbox, right? So they have something that they can interact with. I've already taught them how to interact with the database, and they can go on to do that, like I said, in Python or R or other languages that can connect to a Postgres database. Next slide, please. So some general, like, overall ideas and things that have come up. As I've already said, there's a lot of challenges with using OpenStreetMap just in kind of conventional GIS software. There's, of course, plugins, I know this, but I don't always want to teach a plugin because they go out of date, they need updating. It's already difficult enough to update my lab instructions every year. So yeah, creating something, at least in this case of our province, an extract of the OpenStreetMap data for our province, making that available as a nightly updated database so that students can use it as a sandbox. So they can go and grab the data without really having to worry or think too much about how they're going to transform it or explode the HStore or whatever. And that makes it really simple and flexible for them. The other piece is that they obviously need a lot of practice exploring the tags, kind of understanding the depth of that problem of the tags and the absence of values, presence of values, the fidelity, suitability of use of those different tags for their work, and also with the data model potentially in the case that they want to download data or use it in some other way. And generally, I just think that we need more learning objectives and really well-defined competencies for OpenStreetMap, which, next slide, please, is my final slide, which is to proffer some examples of learning objectives that I think would be useful for teaching OpenStreetMap really at any level. Using Bloom's taxonomic verbs that are measurable, that are something that you can actually describe and measure against in terms of assessment. So I've bolded those verbs here in these four points. But on the top, relating the key elements of the OpenStreetMap data model together and identifying those logical constraints of those, I think is important, especially at a graduate level, to be able to understand how the data are structured. What are the constraints and limitations of that? To be able to discuss the advantages and disadvantages of that key value data store, which some students might not be familiar with, like I said, unless they have a background in computer science. Assess the completeness and fitness of OpenStreetMap tags. So that's like what I was talking about at the beginning, where you might have a tag for wood, but is that good enough? Do you need more detail than that? Or is it just, is coverage of wood good enough for your particular project or application? That's something that students need practice learning about as well. And then finally, choosing suitable OpenStreetMap tags for a particular purpose, integrating them with other data. So filtering them, querying them, implying values for missing key values and so on, and then visualizing them ultimately. I think that these are maybe a starting point for some possible learning objectives. And I'd be interested to hear if you have others to think about. And I've, just to be clear, I've kind of been thinking about this in a very different way, I guess, than a lot of other presentations at State of the Map are generally about, like, contributing to the map. And so my approach here is less about training people how to contribute. It's more about how do we train students to take up OpenStreetMap in whatever application that they could, imagine. And I think that's also a very important piece besides just the community-driven contributions of it. Next slide. I think that's it. Some open educational resources there in case you're interested. It's not all OpenStreetMap, but all the other FOSS that I mentioned is there. You can find me on GitHub, OpenStreetMap, and so on. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul, for such a wonderful presentation. So for me personally, as I'm someone from geomatics background, and I deal with databases on a daily basis, so it was very useful for me. Thank you so much. So if anyone from the audience have any questions regarding the presentation, you are free to ask him the questions. Anyone?
So you mentioned not necessarily teaching how to contribute, but sometimes reverse engineering can teach you how to use the data, right? So if you're have you done that with your students, like having them do attributions, tags, so that they can then understand what everything means when they download the data?
Yeah, sort of. So are you a teacher? Just curious.
No.
No? Is anybody else a teacher in here? No? No. It's not that. Because right now we're in session. So I had to step out of class for a couple of weeks to come here and talk about this. So actually in my absence, I had some students who were very interested in OpenStreetMap, which is a topic I'll be covering in a couple of weeks anyway. And I invited them to speak about their experience. And so they're doing some student-led work, particularly around hot mapping and the contributions. So yeah, I think there is, you're right, there's a complementary piece between those two, where I have, you know, the contributions are important, the volunteer geographic information science of it, and the technical back end of being able to use it or take it up for another purpose. And I think both of them are needed. So my approach this year has mostly been to have students do that while I'm away. So they just teach, using their expertise, actually. Yes. Yeah.
Anyone else from the audience? Do you have any questions?
We have a question from the
We have a question from the venue list session. So the question is, what inspired you to bring OpenStreetMap into a graduate level program? And how did your students initially respond?
Well, I mean, OpenStreetMap is a very unique global database. I pointed out a lot of challenges, but in fact, there's a lot of good things that come out of it as well, as you all know. That's why we're here. And yeah, for some students, it may also be the only data set that's available for a particular project, right? Given all those other issues that I kind of brought up about accessing it. So yeah, in some cases, you know, students, like I said, our students are working around the world in some pretty remote places. They don't always have authoritative data sets to work from. So OpenStreetMap may be the only option. And then there's also kind of some finer details in OpenStreetMap that you might not find in other data sets in different cities and different localities. So yeah, that's part of the reason. I had one undergraduate student this last year use it to map buildings on Haida Gwaii. In fact, can you go back just a couple slides, one of the maps? There's this archipelago that's just off of our coast here. Right there, that's good. So this archipelago here is Haida Gwaii. And it's a very remote archipelago. It's a First Nation, it's a Haida Nation. It's a sovereign nation, First Nation in Canada for the entire archipelago. It's very sparsely populated, but it's also very, very at risk of climate change, particularly with sea level rise. And so we use the OpenStreetMap building data, or the student used OpenStreetMap building data to look at the coastline of the major city, the major town, village that's there, and map out the risks of those buildings to a certain sea level rise scenario. So, I mean, that's completely student driven. Like, that was just his idea. And then we figured, okay, where are we going to get good building data? And so we went to OpenStreetMap. Not just for buildings, but all kinds of other critical infrastructure that also exists there as well. So yeah, it's cases like that where it's, you know, we're working in remote areas, even in Canada, where maybe the best data set is actually OpenStreetMap. So, yeah.
Thank you. So you can also ask questions by scanning the QR code for the venue list. So I don't think anyone of you have any questions now. No?
Do we have like specific tags for OSM that we can use for land cover maps?
It depends, I suppose, on what kind of land covers you're interested in. There's the land. It depends also on whether you want land cover or use. Natural generally is pretty good. I mean, natural is like this one here. It's the base map that OSM is mostly using, right? But if you need, other classes or specific classes or more detailed class, like a forest and stuff like this, that might be a bit limited. land use, if you go to the next map, land use is much more sparse in the OSM database. You're more likely to have a land cover than a land use tag. And that also may vary by geography, but just as this example shows, there's very little land use, even though all of this province is used in some way. All of the land and the forests are managed actively for different reasons. In those cases, there may be other specific tags, you know, that exist that would imply land use that aren't necessarily under land use itself. I can't think of specific examples, but it's one of those cases where there may be other tags that could imply a land use, just as I showed where inside land use there is forest, which is just a land cover. So you might find both of those mixed together, or you might find them under different tags as other values.
Soil?
Soil is a really tricky, really difficult one. I don't study soils, but I've had to try and find soil data, and it's very, very challenging. I don't know within OpenStreetMap the best place to retrieve soils. Maybe somebody else does, but I would assume, like any other place, it's probably very, very difficult to find good soil data. Yeah, you could potentially apply it from a variety of different tags, right? You could do an analysis if it's forested or forested and this and that, then maybe it's this soil type. Maybe that's yeah, I don't know how useful that would be though, right? So yeah, it's a limitation.
Thank you, Paul. Anyone else from the audience? No? Do we have Venulis questions? No Venulis questions as well. Thank you for your presentation.